All right, we are now back in session. We're all well organized. I'd like to welcome back Auditor Mary Holcaballero.
For the record, I am still...
I'm sorry, Mary. I should read the title.
Wait, she needs to read the item, sorry.
281, transfer payroll and non-payroll payment processing functions from the Auditor's Office to the Bureau of Human Resources and the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services, respectively.
For the record, I still am City Auditor Mary Holcaballero, and I'm here today with a second consolidation proposal between the Auditor's Office and the Office of Management and Finance. A few weeks ago, you approved code changes to reflect the transfer of assessments, finance, and foreclosure from my office to the Revenue Division. That change reduced redundant steps in the city's assessments and foreclosure processes and allowed my former staff to benefit from expertise that resides in the Office of Management and Finance. I'm proposing today that the payment functions in the Council Clerk Division in my office be transferred to the Bureau of Revenue, the Bureaus of Revenue and Financial Services and Human Resources. Directors Jennifer Cooperman and Cyrilda Summers McGee have agreed to assume the auditor's payment responsibilities. You may not even be aware that the Council Clerk staff plays a role in vendor payments and city payroll. That responsibility harkens back to a time when the Auditor's Office was responsible for monitoring financial transactions and serving as a payment control. As the accounting division and human services became more specialized and some controls have been built into the financial software, the auditor's role in vendor payments and payroll has become redundant. Carla's handing out a handout that shows the process it's a graphic that shows the back and forth between the auditor's office and the accounting division to produce vendor payments. And by removing the auditor's office from that middle section, and before the checks go out the door, it streamlines the process and makes it a lot more efficient. I have delegated the auditor's charter obligations for vendor payments to the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services, and I plan to do the same for payroll. Today's council action will amend the code to reflect the transfer. I'd like to thank Directors Cooperman and Summers McGee for working out the details of this consolidation, as well as Controller Michelle Kirby, Payroll Manager Tom Schneider, and Tony Anderson, who supervised the Council Clerk Contracts Division in my office. I'm also grateful to General Counsel Jennifer Amiot for managing the code revisions, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you for your presentation. What's the financial implication of this? Is money being transferred to provide this so that the staff in the new place are going to be able to do the same things that your staff have been doing?
No. The work that is done in the Council Clerk's office is redundant to work that's already going on in both payroll and the accounting division. And so that second step, we're stopping that step. And the work that we're transferring over to the Office of Management and Finance does not amount to like even a half-time FTE or something like that.
So in the financial impact statement, it says that check printers, check stock related equipment and supplies are being transferred over. Is there a budget for those within your office that needs to be transferred over?
You know, we have the physical printers that the checks are printed on, and then there's an arrangement between the accounting division and human resources because the budget item for buying checks and toner and things like that for the printers is in the accounting division. And so they will work out how payroll will get access to those.
So that internal materials and services is already not in your budget?
Right.
Thank you.
Very good. Any further questions? Not at the moment. Very good. Is there any public testimony on this item, Carla?
No one signed up.
All right. That's fine. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading.
Thank you.
Appreciate your being here to describe that to us. We will move on to the regular agenda item 288, please.
Amend ordinance to modify a condition of approval for the vacation of a portion of Southeast Claiborne Street, east of Southeast 122nd Avenue, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. PBOT has been working with Portland Parks and Recreation to vacate a portion of Southeast Claiborne Street, located east of Southeast 122nd Avenue. This vacation will consolidate property owned by PPNR for the expansion of Leech Botanical Garden per its recently adopted master plan. Staff from both PBOT and PPNR, Lance Lindell and Brett Horner, will quickly walk us through the item and, of course, are available to answer any questions. Commissioner Fish, would you like to comment on this item?
Thank you, colleague. Just to say that I'm happy to see that we are achieving another milestone in the Leech Botanical Garden project. We want to thank, on behalf of Parks, we want to thank PBOT staff for their partnership in this important project. Gentlemen.
Thank you for the great introduction. My name is Lance Lindahl, Portland Bureau of Transportation Right-of-Way Acquisition. And again, with me today is Brett Horner from Portland Parks and Recreation. We're here today with a request to amend the previously approved ordinance that vacates a portion of Southeast Claiborne Street east of Southeast 122nd Avenue. This street vacation has been a cooperative effort between PBOT and Parks, and the end result will be a big positive for both bureaus. In this slide, you can see in the first photo, it shows Southeast Claiborne Street where it intersects with Southeast 122nd. The street's currently unimproved with a gravel surface, and this segment of street will actually be retained, widened, paved, and will have a sidewalk added as a part of the Leech Botanical Gardens expansion project that's getting ready to kick off. The second photo shows the portion of Southeast Claiborne Street that will be vacated. It's also unpaved and unimproved, and current plans call for this area to be changed and constructed with a paved private driveway, landscaping, a new gift shop, and administrative offices, again, serving the garden exclusively. Here's a quick slide showing the Leech Botanical Gardens master plan. Right in the center there, you can see the area that is being vacated as public right-of-way. It's outlined in the red box. So past actions that have occurred on this item, back on May 9th of last year, City Council approved Ordinance 188928, which vacated a portion of Southeast Claiborne Street subject to certain conditions. And then in January of this year, the Bureau of Development Services revised their response to the street vacation. BDS determined that the original condition of approval was no longer needed. At that time, there was split zoning that was in place at this site. That has been resolved through the comprehensive plan update that recently went through. And also there was a concern about doing a lot consolidation so that the historically platted lot lines would be extinguished. And upon closer review, BDS determined that that section of city code does not apply to lot zoned open space. So what happened is Parks was then being asked to do or to meet a requirement that was quite onerous in terms of survey work and application materials that was not really needed. So in conclusion today, amending this ordinance will remove the now unnecessary requirement for the lot consolidation process. All other conditions of approval for this vacation have been met. So with this amendment as an emergency item, I'll be able to move forward and record the ordinance at this time, and this will allow the construction of the Leech Botanical Gardens expansion to move forward.
Great, any questions? Any public testimony on this item, Carla?
No one signed up.
All right, very good. This is an emergency item. Please call the roll.
Fish?
Yet another example of PBOT and Parks working effectively together. Thank you, gentlemen, for your presentation. Thank you, Commissioner Daly. Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Thanks for the presentation. I can't wait for the garden to be complete. Aye.
Wheeler?
Love to see.
I'm sorry. Oh, order. Fritz.
Thank you. This is really a wonderful project, and it's a joy to see it continuing to move forward under Commissioner Fish and to have been a part of helping to plan it. Thank you, Brett Horner, for all of your work on it, as well as yours in PBOT.
Thank you.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Well, since she voted that way, I think it's good that we let her vote. This is fantastic work, beautiful garden. I'm always happy to see it evolve, so I want to thank my colleagues and their bureaus for working collaboratively to make this happen. Thank you. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item, please. Item number 289.
Accept bid of Granite Construction, Inc. for the Southwest Capitol Highway, Southwest 36th Avenue to Southwest Texas Street pavement rehabilitation project for $1,787,787.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Lester Spittler, the Chief Procurement Officer. You have before you the procurement report recommending a contract to Granite Construction in the amount of $1,787,787. City Council approved ordinance number 189317 on December 19th to allow procurement services to competitively solicit an invitation to bid for the project. The engineer's estimate for the project was $2,024,646. Procurement services issued the invitation to bid and received six responses on February 19th. The lowest responsive and responsible bidder was from Granite Construction. Their bid amount is 11.7% under the engineer's estimate. The city's subcontractor equity program applies to this project, which identifies an aspirational goal of 20% for disadvantaged, minority-owned, women-owned, emerging small businesses, and service-disabled veteran businesses in the subcontractor and supplier areas of the project. Granite Construction has proposed a goal of 20.52% for disadvantaged and minority-owned firms in the areas of handrail fabrication, permanent signage installation, oil and asphalt hauling, saw cutting, traffic control, and trucking services. There are six firms that have been identified to perform this work, and all six are certified as disadvantaged business enterprises and minority-owned business enterprises. Granite Construction is located in Vancouver. They are in full compliance with all of the city's contracting requirements. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. The project manager from PBOT is in attendance as well. Otherwise, I recommend that you approve this report.
Thank you. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you very much for your report. My question is disadvantaged business enterprises, do you have a breakdown of just who is included in that? And again, you know, my question is always who's benefiting from these contracts? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the DBE is a distinct, the disadvantaged business enterprise, a distinct certification that the state promotes. It's different from the minority-owned business enterprise certification. So all six of the firms that are going to be performing the 20.52% subcontractor work are certified as both DBE and minority-owned firms. And that's as far as the breakdown as we can go.
That's not going to be sufficient. So for me, I just need to know, like, when DBE doesn't tell me anything about who's benefiting from the contract, so I'm really interested in what specific firms are benefiting, right? And kind of, so just for future reference, I need to know, like, the details of that breakdown.
So you want to know the makeup of the company ownership?
I want to know whether they are identified as a disadvantaged business, which traditionally is a white-owned company, right? They may be starting off, might be a white woman-owned company, at least on paper. But what I want to see is the diversity of the contracts, right? Is this an African-American firm, Latino firm, Native American firm? Is it a woman? You know, the alphabet soup just doesn't give me enough information to be able to determine who benefits from public contracts.
Okay, the prime contractor is not certified, but the six certified subcontractors are all minority-owned businesses as well as disadvantaged business enterprises. So I don't know the exact ownership of those six firms, but I know that they're all certified with the state as minority-owned business enterprises.
I think I appreciate that. I just, in the future, if you would be kind enough to make sure that I got that information ahead of time so I would be able to see who benefits from public contracts.
Sure.
That is the question that I'm asking. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any further questions? Any public testimony on this item, Carla?
This is a report.
It's a report.
I'm sorry. Report. Commissioner second. Fish moves the report. Commissioner Fritz. That's a new one. Wow, that's a new one for me. Now. And I'm stone cold sober. Commissioner Fritz seconds the report. Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Hardesty.
I'm really looking forward to the day that I don't have to ask in this chamber who benefits from public contracts. It is a very simple question, and using the alphabet soup that we tend to use really doesn't give me factual information that I need. What I hope is that the diversity of our community benefits when public dollars are spent, and that's what I'm looking for. And I will continue to ask that question and expect people who are providing public contracts to have those answers for me. I vote no.
Hugh Daly.
Aye.
Fritz.
So the information that they're all minority certified contractors is in the council documents. So, and I'm not sure how much we can delve further into the ethnicity of the businesses. I'm not sure that we can do that. So I appreciate that they are getting 20% minority-owned businesses, getting $366,791 from this procurement. I'm also really grateful that this project is happening. It's a Fix Our Street project, thanks to Commissioner Novick, and I've seen the signs on Capitol Highway every day when I ride the 44 bus, that your dime at work. And so it's, I think, really important to know that there are projects going on all over the city because of the gas tax, and that's a really important work. Aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. The report's accepted. Thank you for your great presentation. Don't go far. Item number 290.
Amend city code to increase the chief procurement officer's contracting authority and to streamline the procurement and contracting process.
Colleagues, in July of 2017, the city council passed an ordinance increasing the city's procurement officer's contracting authority from $500,000 to $1 million for public contracts for goods and services and construction, and from $100,000 to $500,000 for professional service contracts. Last December, the City Council extended that increased contracting authority until March 31st. This ordinance would make the Chief Procurement Officer's increased contracting authority permanent and additionally raise the authority for professional service contracts to $1 million to conform with other categories. And we, of course, have Chief Procurement Officer Lester Spittlers here to present the ordinance and answer any questions. Thanks for being here again.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. Good morning, City Council. As the mayor said,
I'm sorry, before legal counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt, Lester. Legal counsel had advised me that there was an inadvertently missing underlining and strike-throughs on Exhibit B, so I've been asked to attach the correct document through substitute, so I'll read what legal counsel has provided. The Exhibit B that was filed with the ordinance is inadvertently missing the underlining and strike-throughs showing the proposed code changes, so we need a motion to substitute Exhibit B so we have the correct document attached to the ordinance for the record.
So moved.
We have second. A motion from Commissioner Hardesty, a second from Commissioner Hugh Daly. Any questions about the substitute? Could we call the roll, please, on the substitute? Okay, Commissioner Fritz, you bet.
Well, I just want to specify that I was confused by the substitute because there was underlining and strike through for Section A. This new Section B adds some criteria. So it says, for amendments not exceeding 25% of the original contract amount, amendments exceeding 25% of the original contract amount, provided the amended contract amount does not exceed $1.25 million. The director of the Bureau, whose behalf the contract was issued, concurs. The price agreements, if the yearly estimated cost of the city is $1.25 million or less, amendments where an ordinance approved by the City Council grants additional authority to the Chief Procurement Officer beyond those stated rules, and that's the material change.
Yeah, correct.
So would you just explain a little bit about what difference does this make?
Sure. So price agreements are a different type of contract than regular contracts. They allow for more of an on-call nature of the work, where there's typically a task order that's issued for a specific scope of work, but the contract in of itself is more on call. So previously, we had the price agreement authority in Section 533, which is the Goods and Services Authority. It applied to 568, but we're just being more explicit about including it in 568 with this revision.
Thank you. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Any further questions on the substitute? Please call the roll on the substitute.
Fish?
Aye.
Hardesty?
So if I understand this amendment correctly, rather than having authority for a million, the procurement officer would have authority to sign a contract for up to a million, 250. If that is my understanding, I would not support this amendment, and I vote no.
That's, can I respond?
Was that there?
The intent was, there's always been authority in our rules that allows me to increase a contract by 25% of the original value. So I can't award an initial or sign an initial contract up to $1,250,000. It would be up to a million, and then if the Bureau needed more capacity in the contract from a funding perspective, then we could amend it to add 25%. So in the cumulative total is $1,250,000, but the initial contract would not be able to exceed a million.
So these are on-call contracts that you would be able to negotiate and without the council's oversight. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And because they're on-call contracts, has there ever been a time that you've actually gone into negotiations on a $1 million contract for a on-call personnel?
Yeah, the bureaus use a lot of on-call architectural and engineering contracts. And as part of that process, we're not allowed to take price into consideration when we're selecting a contractor. So what happens is the city selects the highest qualified contractor, and then we enter into negotiations with that firm on their hourly rates. The hourly rates are what they bill on each task order. So when a scope of work comes up under a price agreement, the Bureau engages the consulting firm. They send them a scope of work. The consulting firm sends back a proposal, and the proposed cost is reflective of the hourly rates that were negotiated at the time the contract was awarded.
So this is a RFP process?
It's a qualifications-based selection RFP process.
And it is a diverse pool of candidates that you're choosing from?
The same goals and objectives apply to these types of procurements that apply to all of our procurements. So depending on the dollar value, we have to solicit them openly and competitively. If they're under a certain dollar value, if it's $100,000 and under, for example, the city is allowed to directly award a contract to a certified firm without going through any competitive process, which is a new pilot, and that's been wildly successful throughout the city.
So how does the city determine whether or not it's effective in reaching its goals of contracting with communities of color, and very specifically across the board with women? How do we ever figure out whether or not those goals are achieved?
So the city has an aspirational goal via our subcontractor equity program, and we report on those metrics every year on what the city achieves. I think recently you heard a Fixing Our Streets presentation where the utilization was in the 60%. So, you know, certain contracts are more, are better suited for competing at a smaller level.
So Lester, could I suggest this? Let's finish the vote. It makes me nervous that we have an ongoing dialogue in the middle of a vote. So let's finish the vote, and then let's have this conversation, because it's a good one, and I want to have it, but I just don't think it's appropriate to have it in the middle of an open vote. Continue to call the roll, please.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
So you voted?
I did, and I voted no.
I'll vote aye to put it on the table.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment's on the table.
Mayor, given that this is an emergency ordinance, obviously Commissioner Hardesty has some questions. I had not reviewed this language, and neither has my financial and legal genius in my office. So I'm wondering if we could set this over till next week so that we have Commissioner Hardesty has time to get a full briefing and that I have just a bit more time to look it over.
I'd be willing to do that, yes.
Would that be, presumably it's an emergency because you need to get it done quickly. Is there a reason
I'd rather hold it over for 1 week than remove the emergency clause if those are my options.
I think those might be your options.
Is that what you would request?
I think that's a great idea.
Okay, very good. So we will hold this over in my office. We'll bring it back next week. Thank you, Lester. I appreciate it. Next item, 291.
Adopt revised comprehensive financial management policies, financial planning, operations and maintenance, and budget to address the city's financial planning and annual budget processes.
Colleagues, this resolution adopts two revised comprehensive financial management policies and a related procedure that addresses the city's financial planning process and annual budget process. This item was originally heard on March 13th, and this is a substitute resolution. CFO, Chief Financial Officer Jennifer Cooperman, is here to explain the changes in the substitute resolution and answer any questions that we might have about the policies. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. As introduced, I'm Jennifer Cooperman. I'm joined by Josh Harwood, City Economist out of the City Budget Office. We're here today to present updates to two of the city's comprehensive financial management policies that address the city's financial planning and annual budget process. As the mayor stated, these are substitutes to what I presented on March 13th. There's one change from March 13th, and that's the deletion of language that addressed the funding of labor agreement costs. And I'd like to take just a couple of minutes to highlight the following revisions that are being proposed to these policies. FIN 203, which discusses financial planning, has been revised to incorporate specific council direction for bureaus to prioritize asset management as a citywide core business function, including life cycle costing and the setting aside of replacement reserves. And asset management is defined to include the city's investments in capital assets and equipment. And assets are tangible assets as well as intangible assets. Intangible meaning software, right-of-way, et cetera. FIN 203 also is amended to direct bureaus to develop long-term financial plans, which are in addition to and go beyond the currently required five-year plans. They're intended to highlight and quantify in these financial plans and in the capital improvement plans funding gaps as well as proposing strategies to address them. As submitted, FIN 203 will codify the current restriction of capital set-aside resources to projects relating to emergency preparedness, parks and recreation, and transportation. Per Resolution 37101 from 2015, these restrictions are otherwise due to expire on June 30th, 2019. FIN 204 budget has been revised to require bureaus to secure council approval for financial commitments, such as bureau director decisions or litigation settlements of $500,000 or more after the current year budget is approved that a bureau otherwise cannot accommodate. Change guidance for amending the budget during the year to urgent and unforeseen needs rather than needs that are just unanticipated. Will allow one-time resources to be used to address citywide liabilities that are not included in the city's five-year forecast. Will consolidate the capital set-aside ranking and funding process to once per year during the annual budget process. And will set certain limitations on the competitive special appropriations grant process. And we're available to answer any questions that you might have about these financial policies.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you so much, Director Cooperman. My question has to do with the funding limitations on FIN 2.03. If you look under the funding, we have very narrowly set a standard for how that 50% could be used. That includes emergency preparedness, parks and recreation, and transportation. Does that mean that if any other bureau in the city has a desire to actually utilize that money that's been set aside, that they would have no access to it?
Can you speak to that?
I can try. Yeah. For the record, Josh Harwood, City Economist. Our director, Jessica Kennard, could not be here today. She is experiencing the wonders of flu season, so apologize for her not being here. The short answer is yes. However, it is within council's capacity to waive the policy in an individual circumstance and state why they're doing it. And so,
actually, could I just dive in here? Because I was, the current policy is this. It was due to a binding city policy that the council adopted a little over 3 years ago because we got the overall asset report and looked at where are the biggest deficits, and they're in those three bureaus. So that's where the 50% set aside is currently set aside to be. That was due to sunset in 4 years, which is why we're having this conversation on that. So thank you for raising it. It doesn't preclude the other 50% of the one-time money going to asset management as well. So that's where we're trying to be really focused on where do we get the biggest bang for the buck in which bureaus, and knowing that there's still the other, in this year's budget, there's 14 million in the one-time, 7 million to asset management in these three areas, and 7 million that could go to something else. And I would also say that it's been a little bit, the term emergency management has been used a bit creatively in recent times, in that it funded, I think, the firefighters' apparatus, right?
Well, thank you very much. That's very helpful because, I think I just turned me off. What is the definition of emergency preparedness? Because as you know, I have the rest of the first responders in my portfolio.
So I'm really surprised that you're questioning this particular thing.
Well, I'm not, if it says emergency preparedness, I'm just wondering if it's across the board. As you said, it's been used creatively that way. I guess my concern is that we don't know what we don't know yet. And there may be something else that comes up that needs capital improvement. And I'm just concerned that we're painting ourselves into a box that we will not be able to get out of.
Could I make a suggestion
Please.
Here? I would recommend we adopt this policy, but I do think there is a need for us to review the question of the categories. One could make a very strong case, and Commissioner Hardesty, I believe you've made, well, you haven't necessarily made this case, but you talk a lot about technology, and technology is becoming more of infrastructure to the work we do. One could make a case that city technology should be included as part of the capital side. I'm not saying that that's where I am today, but I do think it would be useful for you to go off and for some period of time review that question about whether we have the right buckets, whether we should be considering different buckets, and then come back to this council with a recommendation.
And as a point of information, Mayor, we did use that bucket for the data center that was transferred out of the earthquake area.
Indeed we did.
Yes.
I'll just put my cards on the table. I'm all for flexibility, but the trade-off, of course, is more flexibility means less discipline. And mm-hmm. so we need to find that right balance.
So for certain folks who weren't here in 2015 when the prior resolution 37107 was adopted, that did a few things, but one of the most major ones, in my opinion, was it increased the capital set-aside percentage from 25% up to 50%. Mm-hmm. So the council did take a very proactive step recognizing the infrastructure needs. In talking with city staff, I think there is a desire for you to have more flexibility than less, and that identifying the buckets up front is restricting you because there are needs that do come up that might not easily fit into those three buckets. The choices and the allocations will come to you regardless.
That's right. So. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. This seems like an important piece, and I would offer, if we could just hold this over so that we could have more of a conversation on it until next week.
I'd rather not. I'd rather move forward on this. But, as I said, what we could do is we could establish in the legislative record a request that you come back in 6 months or whenever with a more thorough analysis on whether we have the right buckets. But I think it's important that we move forward on the fiscal policies.
Mr. Mayor?
Any other?
Mr. Mayor?
Oh, I'm sorry, Robert.
Sorry. One formality.
Sorry, Josh.
Sorry, one formality. I believe there has been a substitute resolution
to be formally adopted. We'll get to that. I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Is there more on this particular subject before I ask if we can get a motion, please, for the substitute resolution?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fritz, a second from Commissioner Fish. Any further discussion on putting the substitute on the table? Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Hardesty.
No.
Udaley.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Substitute's on the table. All right, so we're open for more questions, thoughts, concerns. Any public testimony on the resolution?
No one signed up.
Very good. Call the roll.
Fish.
Thank you to Director Cooperman and all those who worked on this set of policies. And I appreciate the changes that were made from the last iteration to what we have before us today. Aye.
Hardesty.
Thank you so much, Director Cooperman. I really appreciate the work that you and your team have done on this project. I cannot in good faith vote for something that I do not support the limitations that we are putting on ourselves. And it is not acceptable to me that I need to wait 6 months so that I can have clarity on whether or not we are moving in a direction that makes sense. I vote no.
Udaley.
I believe this is the third time we have considered this set, or, well, second? Really, only the second? Feels like the third time. I appreciate the revisions. My concerns have been addressed, and I vote aye.
Fritz.
So if this resolution were to be rejected, the current policy is to direct 50% to parks, transportation and emergency management, and the reason for that is that the unfunded liability especially in parks and transportation dwarfs all other needs in the city. We added emergency preparedness to allow some more flexibility while still focusing on the things that are the most urgent and the most cost effective, and so this takes away the sunset, and I appreciate all of the different policies and thank you for taking my feedback and incorporating much of it. Aye.
Wheeler.
Thank you, CFO Cooperman, for your presentation. Josh, thank you. Thanks for the hard work that you have put into this, your staff, OMF, along with the City Budget Office and city budget managers all across the city who work to develop these revised policies. Thank you again for your flexibility on taking into account our input in recent weeks to help solidify our viewpoints. I look forward to continuing the conversation with my colleagues in the Office of Management and Finance about how we can best address the question of funding labor agreement costs, since one of the agreements we made collectively was to withdraw that from consideration today. The revisions to our comprehensive financial management policies, I believe, improve the city's financial planning, financial management, asset management, and providing adequate reserves, aligning our policies with national best practices, and encouraging responsible stewardship of city assets. These improved policies will help us to achieve our financial management goals, including better long-term planning, promoting collaboration during the annual budget process, directing resources towards critical infrastructure projects, addressing intergenerational equity issues, and maintaining financial sustainability. One final note I'll put on the table. These policies are always subject to change. This is fluid. They evolve as the needs and the interests of our city and our fiscal structure evolve. I appreciate the hard work you put into it. It's an excellent product. I vote aye. The resolution is adopted. Next item, please. 292.
Appoint Annalise Kohler to the Portland Housing Bureau Bond Oversight Committee for a term to expire March 1, 2022.
Excellent. We have Portland Housing Bureau Director Shannon Callahan here this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. We had expected Annalisa to be here this morning, but I think she is not quite here yet. So if you wouldn't mind, I'll just do a little brief introduction about Annalise Kohler, who is... Annalise.
Hi. Great timing.
So have you ever had that nightmare where you walk into a crowded room and you're
staring at you?
Good morning. So the Bond Oversight Committee is composed of five community members. One of each is appointed by each of the commissioners and the mayor. Commissioner Hardesty is appointing Annalisa this morning to replace Jess Larson, who was a previous appointee of Commissioner Salzman. Annalise has worked with the Housing Bureau for quite some time on affordable housing issues, as well as was on the committee that moved forward the original ballot measure for the Portland Housing Bond itself, the Welcome Home Steering Committee. Annalise is also a public policy advocate for the food bank, and we are privileged and honored to have her on our oversight committee. So with that, I would turn it over to Annalise.
Yeah, thank you. I thought I'd have a couple of minutes to think about this, but coming in hot, I just want to say thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm very excited about this and feel very privileged to be here. I started at the food bank about 7 years ago, and my assumption was that I would be working on food stamps and other kind of anti-hunger policies and programs, and very quickly I have spent the bulk of my career there working on housing. Our public policy priorities are guided by what we hear from the people that we serve, and unsurprisingly, I'm sure to you, housing is the number one reason that people cite. So, worked on the Portland Housing Bond and the Metro Housing Bond, and really excited to be able to see some of that work through on the Oversight Committee. Thank you.
Very good. Well, first of all, let me say thank you. Number two, let me just say you do really well on the fly. that was exceptional. Number three, I want to thank Jess Larson for her service to this important committee, and I want to thank you, Annalise, for being willing to come on board. I know you're a busy person. Side note, my wife Katrina was at the food bank last night with I think 17 or 18 other volunteers from our daughter's school, and they had a blast.
Yes.
And they came back and just said, you know, the Oregon Food Bank is just a paragon of organization. And I just wanted to pass that on to you.
Thank you.
So thank you for your willingness to serve. With that, I'll accept a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion to accept the report from Commissioner Hardesty, a second from Commissioner Udaly. Carla, please call the roll.
Fish.
Well, Annalisa, thank you very much for stepping up and offering to serve. And also thank you for the work you did on both housing bonds. The Metro Housing Bond was, I thought, a particularly collaborative and extraordinary undertaking, and I set aside almost a day a week last fall to participate in the leadership of that effort. And I know you and the food bank made a huge difference, and we ended up winning in all three counties, mm-hmm. which is really a testament to the strength of our coalition.
Yeah.
Thanks for all that you do for our community, and thank you for stepping up again to serve in this important role. I'm pleased to support your nomination. Aye.
Hardesty?
I want to also thank Jess Lawson for her service and her visionary leadership on this committee, and I'm really thrilled to have Annalise come and take that spot. The Oregon Food Bank is near and dear to my heart as someone who loves the Waterfront Blues Festival. I have pretty much interviewed anybody and everybody who's ever played at the Blues Festival, and my favorite interview is always with the Oregon Food Bank. Mm-hmm. Because it is real that the folks who work and volunteer are doing it not for the money, but doing it purely out of the love of community and the love of people. I vote aye.
Udaly?
I'm going to add to the chorus of thanking Jess and welcoming Annalise. I like to take every opportunity I can to highlight the fact that despite our booming economy, Oregon has one of the worst rates of food security in the country, and I'm really grateful to have someone serving who understands this intersection of housing unaffordability and hunger. And I vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Ms. Kohler, for being here and for explaining your work at the food bank and how it does relate to housing, as Commissioner Udaly said. And I appreciate your service. You have big shoes to fill, but I'm sure you can do it. Aye.
Wheeler.
Very happy to support this appointment. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for bringing it forward. I vote aye. The report's accepted and the appointment is approved. Welcome aboard.
Yes. Yay, now you get to volunteer lots of hours for free.
Yes. It's going to be great.
Now she's running off to the next step. Yeah. I say, who was that masked woman? Next item, please. 293.
Approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program for Northeast Killingsworth Apartments located at 5470 Northeast 16th Avenue.
Very good. We have Shannon Callahan, Director of the Housing Bureau, is here, and Dory Van Bockel, who is responsible for our multi program. I don't know who's presenting today, but I'll just introduce you both.
Good morning again, Mayor and Commissioners.
Good morning.
Shannon Callahan. Just as way of reminder, City Council passed a comprehensive inclusionary policy, housing policy, in 2016. Prior to when that policy took effect, 19,000 units of housing were permitted and vested in that program beforehand, meaning they did not have to comply with the requirements to include affordable housing in their developments. Based on the large pipeline that did not supply any affordable housing, the mayor and commissioners asked us to look at creating a program to incent that pipeline to come forward and voluntarily include affordable housing. After working with City Council and the Multnomah County Commission, a program was approved to provide a limited tax exemption for a period of 10 years in exchange for 10 years of affordability. The development you have before you today is the first development to take advantage of that program. It will be providing 8 units in their new development for affordable housing. The range of rent savings for tenants who would reside in that building would be from a $479 savings a month to $650 savings a month in the one bedrooms. And with that, I would like to just turn it over to Dory to add a few comments, and we're here to answer any questions you might have.
Good morning, Commissioners, Mayor Wheeler. I'm Dory Van Bockel, Program Manager of the Multi Program. And as Shannon mentioned, this project will bring 8 units to the affordable housing portfolio. They will be affordable at 60% of median family income. That's 20% of each of the unit types. It's not a real big building. There's only 39 units, and they are comprised of studios and one bedrooms. So we'll have 4 studio apartments and 4 studio one bedrooms. This is located in fairly high opportunity area within the city. There'll be ground floor commercial space. There's lots of restaurants and other commercial activity there along Killingsworth. And the developer has expressed interest in using the city's preference policy to help rent those units as well.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions? Please call the roll.
I think everybody's signed
up. Oh, I'm sorry. Is there anybody signed up? I apologize.
I think they all may have left. It was Lightning, Maggie, Courtney, Shannon, and Desiree Rose.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Happy to see the incenting the pipeline working. Aye.
Fritz.
Very happy to see that they're choosing 60%, which is the greater need, and also that there's a mix between the smaller one and then one bedroom. So again, good work. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Thank you.
Mayor?
The ordinance is adopted. Commissioner Fish.
283 was pulled by Lightning. He is not here right now. I would urge that we just read it and go to a vote.
283, please read it.
Authorize the acceptance of a donation of 385 square feet of real property on Northeast 11th Avenue, adjacent to Woodlawn Park, to be used for park purposes.
Carla, is there anyone signed up for public testimony?
This was pulled. I didn't have a sign-up sheet.
Very good. Call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Commissioner Fish, I'm going to be highly entertained to see what your operations and maintenance budget request is going to be for this.
It's going to be a big number.
I thought it might be. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. 284, please.
Accept a grant in the amount of $1,682,468 from the Oregon Department of Transportation and authorize an intergovernmental agreement for the I-205 undercrossing project.
Who pulled this item? Commissioner Hardesty.
Hi, Mayor. I was the one that pulled this off the agenda. I have all my questions answered. I do apologize that you had to hang out.
Oh, that's okay.
But I feel very confident and positive, and this is a great thing for my community.
Very good. Thank you for being here, and thanks for your hard work on this.
Would you like to put your name in the record so people know you've said it?
For the record, Elizabeth Tilstrom, project manager with the Portland Bureau of Transportation.
Thank you for your work.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
We really appreciate it. Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. We are adjourned.